You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Last week we got up to the concept of Brias Adam, and I pointed out in last week's, so 2 weeks ago, Shir, that Brias Adam really has two different narratives in the Chumash. The first one's contained in Perek Aleph, the second one's contained in Perek Beis. And we went through all the Rambans, really, that dealt with the Bria in Perek Aleph. And what we ultimately came up with at the end of the day is the ultimate major statement of the Ramban, and that is that Bria usually means creation, Yesh Miayin, creating something that didn't exist before. You know, and then the first time it was used in the Chumash, it was Mamish creation of Yesh Miayin, where you created something from nothing. And I gave a whole share on that last week. The second major place where that Bria is mentioned is when it comes to Bria Sa'adam. And just look back momentarily to the pasuk we were dealing with last week. We were basically reading on page 3 and 4 of these Marimah Tamas, where it says on pasuk Chav Zayim, Vayivra Elokim es Adam b'tzalmo, b'tzalmukim baros, azokim keva barosam. We find Bria mentioned explicitly when it comes to the creation of Adam, mentioned multiple times over and over again. So over here the Ramban says that the reason that bar is mentioned again, unlike in the creation of the rest of the 6 days, the creation of the moon, the stars, the sun, of animals, all of that, the words of Asira, Asiya, and Yetzira mention, which mean basically you're taking a pre-existing substance and you're formatting it, you're creating it, you're manipulating it, you're giving it a tzuva kedaymer. So the fact of the matter is when it came to everything up until Brias Adam, it was taking an original matter of Brias Olam that Hashem created on day one, where the Yesh, Yesh Miayin became a Yesh, and I gave you the Kabbalistic source of the Ramban quoted in the Chumash to indicate the Kabbalistic pshat, that it went from Tohu to Bohu. Tohu is representative of the creation of the divine energy that Hashem used initially to bring this world into existence, and then the bow was the concretization of that into a physical mass. He went from energy into mass. I pointed out last week that in the Gaish world, Lahavdol, when they finally in the early 1900s started to espouse the Big Bang theory rather than the constant universe existence concept, so they used a very similar concept that what they describe happening in Briyat Olam is that first, from some place where they don't know who pushed the button, there was a tremendous release of incredible energy, and that energy, ultimately speaking, metamorphosized into a physical substance. So also you went from energy to matter, the opposite of, you know, EMC squared, basically it's Einstein's formula for, you know, for the atomic energy, using the opposite direction. Usually matter makes energy, here energy metamorphosized into matter. So the fact is, even in the Gaius world, when it came to their scientific explorations, they came to a similar phenomenon that energy was here first, whether it's physical energy or metaphysical energy, which ultimately metamorphosized into matter, which ultimately is in very concert with Chazal, that matter was created from energy itself. The only difference I pointed out in the Ramban between the Ramban's version of creation ex nihilo and between the non-Jewish world is that for the non-Jewish world, whatever we have in existence came from one energy source being metamorphosized into physical substance. For the Ramban claims, based on Kabbalistic literature, there was a Yesh Miayin energy being turned into physical form for the Eretz alone and for the Shemayim, which means there were two simultaneous explosions taking place. But besides that, everybody else seems to be pretty much on the same line. And after that, the matter just expanded and expanded and expanded, as Chazal described it in their Midrashic literature, creating the universe and the earth and all the planets and the stars and everything else.
So in both systems, there's expansion taking place, and to this very day, scientists claim that the expansion hasn't stopped yet. Even though Lama Darashi Chazal seems to imply that Hashem said Dayo at a certain point in time, according to scientists, they claim that the expansion is still going on, but that's not really relevant to the topic tonight. When it came to Bria Sa'adam, the Rebbe Nosham again emphasized that this is not Asiya V'Yetzira, but Bria Sa'adam is a new Bria, a Yesh Mi'ayin. And what's the Yesh Mi'ayin? So in last week's Ramban, just to say quickly, as an entree into tonight's phenomenon, is what makes man's creation unique and distinct is the fact that Hashem did something now that was never in existence up until this point in time, and that is he decided to create an entity that's a combination of a physical and metaphysical essence. A physical essence where man is looked upon as a microcosm of the entire physical universe. In fact, when it says Naseh, the Ramban says, who is Hashem talking to? He's not talking to Malachim, according to the Ramban. He's making a statement of the fact that the Bria has to realize all the Bria he created up until now, which means the inanimate and the vegetable kingdom and the animal kingdom. Naseh means, I'm going to make man a microcosm, the Ramban says, of all the physical entities I create up until now, Bria to Olam. When man's created, Adama means the same concept of the physicality of the universe. Man's now going to be a microcosm of that physical essence. And that's why man's called, in Russian philosophy, man's called an Olam Katan in comparison to the Olam Gadol of the entire universe in which we exist. So man, on one hand, he was saying that that's one part of man, that's the physical part. What's making man unique, and I'm calling this Bria, is I'm giving now man something that the animals don't even have. And that is a metaphysical Tzelem Elokim, a spiritual essence of divinity of God. That combination of combining the divinity of God, the essence of Hashem's Tzelem Elokim, with a physical entity was never ever created before. That's why the Ramban says Hashem uses the word Bria, because he's creating now a combination of two opposite entities that are now going to be joined together and work in joint effort. And in many respects, the Tzelem Elokim is going to have control not only on the metaphysical dimensions of man, but even on the physical dimensions of man, as well as I'm going to show you in today's shiur. So therefore, the Bria means this is a creation, a new creation that had existed before, and Adam is a representation of it, and that's why, according to Ramban, the word Bria is mentioned to show you the Bria Chadasha of Yishmael that never existed before with Bria's Adam, the Tziruf of the Tzelem Elokim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being combined with the physical universe below as a new type of entity. That's what the Ramban says while Bria is mentioned over here. It doesn't mean that the word, we'll see very shortly, Tzir and Asi is not mentioned by Adam later on, but that's dealing with the physical essence of man, because man's body, in many respects, when it comes to man's body systems, as I mentioned later on, has many, many body systems which are basically cognates to body systems that exist in the lower animal kingdom and vegetative kingdom and such. But at the end of the day, the fact of the matter is, man's creation as the Bria Chadasha was what the Ramban says is the reason the Bria is mentioned multiple times, and basically in Perek Aleph, on that Pasach of Zion, and that's where we ended up last week when it came to dealing with that specific Ramban. Today, we're getting now to a crucial Ramban, which is part two, which goes even deeper into the topic. And you'll see today when I say going deeper, you'll understand very shortly why I'm saying this. If you turn out to page number six, on page number six, you have the second description of Bria Sa'adam. And over here, what's interesting is, well, let's just read the second very quickly just to see the entree into this. It says, "V'adam ayim la'avodas adama ve'ed yala ben ares v'hishka es kol penei ha'adama v'yitza Hashem Elokim es adam afa min ha'adama." Since man was already created from previously existing materials of the physical universe that existed up until now, he created man from the same material he created the rest of the physical Bria. So that's why over here the word v'yitza is not mentioned, but v'yitza is mentioned. He formed man into a format of man, format of that type of material world, different than the way he formed the animal kingdom,
and the vegetable kingdom and an inanimate kingdom, but that is Yetzirah, it's a Yesh Miyesh type of phenomenon. So that was the Nasa, we're going to take from the physical world, from all different entities, a sampling that are going to be incorporated into man. And then the Torah tells us, which is the crucial part of tonight's shiur, it then says, Vayipach biyapach, Hashem blew into man's nostrils, a nishmas, turn out the page number 8, a nishmas chayim, Vayhi adam nefesh chayim, man became a living soul as a result of it. Now what we're going to do tonight, at least initially, is see what the Ramban does in the interpretation of this, because as you're going to see very shortly, this is a fascinating, fascinating piece of Ramban. What Ramban does is also very incredible, besides becoming now his Kabbalistic presentations, I pointed out last week, are unusual, because the Ramban usually is not Megala Barichas, the Kabbalistic Pshatim of the Psukim. In Briat Olam, that was the exception to the rule. He quotes extensively from Sefer Vayitzira, Sefer Habahir, when it comes to showing Kabbalistically what the Psukim mean, as I mentioned last week. But over here, when it comes to the concept of giving us a Nishmas Hashem that's blown into us, the Ramban basically mentions a major machlokas that exists, not only between him and the Rambam, but in fact, this was an earlier machlokas as well, even in the Gaish world, between Plato and Aristotle. And it's going to be interesting, I'll show you tonight, as the Ramban formulates who he held like and who the Rama held at. At the end of tonight's discussion, you'll see that the Rama followed Aristotle's phenomena, yeah? And the Ramban followed Plato. But you're going to see very shortly why what I mean by this and the ramifications we're going to get from analyzing it. Now I'll tell you what we're going to read from inside. I'm purposely using the article because when it comes to the Kabbalistic dimensions of the Ramban, especially in this type of topic, you want to have the English because of the footnotes are very, very, very important over here. We're on page number 6. I purposely put little letters, so we're going to be reading that where it says F and G, where it says Pasek Yipach Apav Nishmas Chayim. So listen very carefully what the Ramban says over here, and you'll see what I mean very shortly when I say this is unique. It says, Yir mazlono hakasad azeh malas hanefesh v'yisoda v'soda. We have over here what Kodavis at the Pasuk is teaching us is the uniqueness and the exaltedness of the human being, his soul, its essence, and its mystical source. Ki hizker bo shemo, if you notice over here, it says Yitzar Hashem Elokim. So you have both of the Shemus HaKadosh Baruch Hu mentioned over here, which is unusual when it comes to the other parts of Bria, where only one of the names were mentioned, one at a time, but not two together. So says the Ramban over here, V'amad Kihu Nafach Biyapav Nishmas Chayim, that the Rabban Hashem blew into man's nostrils a soul of life. To inform that the soul did not come to man from the physical elements as is alluded to concerning the soul of mobility. Now what does this mean? Let me explain to you, for those who were not here last week, for those who were last week, just to remind you. In the animal kingdom as a live entity, so you have the physical body of the animal. But besides the physical body of the animal, the Ramban points out all animals have at least two types of living spirits contained inside, two different types of nefeshes. One he calls the nefesh hatzamachas, which is responsible for the animal's capacity to be able to reproduce, to propagate, literally to grow, and etc., that animals have. And then, besides that, there's what's called the nefesh hatenua, the mobility capacity of the animal to move around and to know what is safe territory, what's dangerous territory, to run to good places, to run after prey, to run away from places that are endangering their life. So the animal itself has in its actual physical essence, as we saw in Ramban last week, and the Ramban's alluding to it over here, a physical body, that takes care of its, physical needs. But that body has to be animated by special neshamas Hashem put into it. And then the two neshamas the animal's body has that takes care of all of its procreative, vegetative existence on the face of this earth that makes its decisions and it's its natural teva are called the ruach hatzamachas and the ruach hatenua. That's what an animal has.
And he says that the physical earth that Hashem created initially, which basically was the source of the physicality animal, is the same exact source of the powers of the Koich HaTzamachas and the Kalkos of Tenua. They all were part of the initial metamorphosis of Hashem's divine energy of the Torah that he used as the blueprint with the Shemus Hashem Kedama. That power, when he made physical Bria, had physical components and had what we call movement and nefesh components, but they come from a divine entity that was created outside the persona of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the physical capacities of movement and physicality are both part of Bris Olam, creation, Yeshman, going back to the very beginning. So he says, I want you to know, Ramban says, that when it comes to man, the man, when it came to possessing his physical capacities, at least at this point in time, he wants to say man's koach, especially of the seichel, but seems to allude to the fact that even the koach of the tumah tzemachas didn't necessarily come like the animals had from the physical bria itself of the bria to olam, but these could be brand new kochos of tenua, of tzemachas, and finally of the concept of the tzelem elokim of the seichel, etc., etc., where the Ramban describes what the tzelem elokim means for human beings, that those capacities were now given to man as a new, fresh phenomenon based upon the pasuk of Yipach Pa'apa Nishmas Chayim. The man became a physical entity with all of these powers, not from a physically created force of the earth and its kochos, but totally from a divine source above. What he's articulating, I think, as you're soon going to see in the first perush, is really the way the Aristotelians looked upon it, and ultimately the way the Rambam looked upon it, that everything that came into man, all his living kochos, all his capacities, were part of the Tzelem Hakim that's being mentioned over here in the Chumash. And the Ramban starts with that, what he feels the Pshuto Shemikra is basically that. That's why he emphasizes over here that the Neshama came to man, is alluded to coming from what, basically speaking, it did not come from the physical earth like the animals. And gam lo b'shtalchus min haschalim ha'nivdalim. Man's metaphysical spiritual essence also was not given to him from the malachim. The malachim didn't contribute to our special tzelem akim qualities. That came directly b'chod b'yatzmo from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In Kabbalistic literature, they say v'yipach v'yapav me'yatzmo, from Hashem's divine essence, whatever that means. That essence blew into man, that tzelem elokim, directly from him. The malachim were not involved, according to Ramban's interpretation. He wasn't even shaleitza. That's the Rashi's position, but that's not the Ramban's position. Let's continue, turn the page, Rav Isai. And we'll continue now on the right-hand side of the page. And he says, therefore, the separate intelligence, which is an allusion to the malachim, did not give us our tzelem elokim, al v'hi ruach Hashem ha-gadol, mipiv das utavuna, which meant it was blown from Hashem himself into man, from his mouth, kim das utavuna, he's quoting a pasuk over here, from Sefer Mishlei, ki ha-nofeach ba'ape acher, minishmosi yitein bo. When I blow into somebody else's nostril, I give you my own breath. When you do CPR, Rabbi Yisai, you're blowing your own breath into that other person's body. This is the Rabbeinu Shalom using divine CPR to blow the neshama from the Rabbeinu Shalom's essence into a human being. V'zeh shenema v'nishma shakai tavinein, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu, obviously with the breath of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, gave them understanding. This came directly from the Kodesh Baruch Hu, b'chvod v'yatzma. So the Ramban in his Pshuto Shel Mikra is telling us that man's animation, at least at this point in time, when it comes to not only the Tzelem Elokim dimension, but even the power of movement, Koach HaTnu and Koach HaTzemachas, all of that stuff came at this point in time into man's body from the Rosh Hashanah blowing that power into mankind. Now, skip to where it says, quotation B, V'daki ha-mischachmim b'mecha nechalu ba'adam. Now, when he says ha-mischachmim, it's allusion to the machlokes amongst the Greek philosophers between Aristotle and Plato, and he's going to use this interesting. It's also unusual for the Ramban to do this. It's more usual for the Ramban to do it this way than the Ramban. So over here the Ramban says, let's start off with their Chakira. And he says the following, that the scholars of philosophy have a disagreement about the soul of man. Mehem Yomru, those who say, Ki ba'odam shlosh nefashos. So he first starts explaining the Platonic version. The man has three different souls. And what are they? The nefesh ha-gidol, ha-tzameach, which man grows, a man reproduces and such. That's called the nefesh ha-gidol, ha-tzameach, the soul growth. And even vegetables and plants have a nefesh ha-tzameach in order for them to reproduce and replicate themselves each and every year as crops replicate themselves. Bo'od nefesh ha-tenua, shestira kasiv, v'dog and v'chai v'chol remes aretz, the power of mobility to move around, and to know where to go, where not to go, and to be able to know it's a good place, and it's a safe place, and a dangerous place, which all animal creatures, fish, beasts, animals, everything has. So that's nefesh number two. And nefesh number three he calls nefesh ha-maskeles, the rational soul. And that's the one that is being mentioned, being blown into man's nostrils over here, which means that according to some, the only thing blown into man's nostrils over here, according to the Platonic version, is the Nefesh HaMaskelas, which indicates that according to this thesis, man's ability to be Tzameach, a man's ability of Tenuo, with all that represents, was part of man's physical bria from the earth. And the same way the animals got that koyach from the earth, as part of the earthly creation they were created from, likewise man, according to this Platonic version, got those kochos initially from the earth they were created from. The only thing that's added in Perek number Bezo, when he blew air, that's the nefesh ha-maskeles, which is what separates us from the animal kingdom. That's the koyach ha-dibur, the koyach ha-machshava, the koyach of thinking, the being able to rationalize, to be able to invent, to be able to discover. All our capacities on a physical level, on a scientific level, on a technological or medical level, are part of the nefesh ha-maskeles. That also gives us the ability to perceive the Torah and the amkus of all that's contained in the Torah itself, and also our ability to connect to the Rabbanu Shem on a very high level. All of this is granted us through our nefesh ha-maskeles that the Rabbanu Shem granted us and mentioned in the Perek Beis of Sefer Bereishis. Okay, now, he then says, Umehem Yomru, there are those who say, he's now quoting the Aristotle version, Kizos ha-nefesh asher ba'adam, mipia elyon, says that when it comes to the soul that Hashem gave, when he blew into mouth, Bo yimsu shlosh ha-kochos eila. All the three kochos I mentioned before, the koch ha-tzameach, the koch ha-nua, and the koch ha-maskeles, according to the Aristotelian version, which the Rambam ultimately accepts, were not in man when his body was created. We'll see very shortly, when man's body was created, it was a total, empty, nothing, immovable, without any life whatsoever. Until he blew this Ruach HaChaim, the Rambam is going to describe it as a piece of cheres, like a dead piece of earthenware. And all of a sudden, when he blew this Nefesh HaChaim, according to Aristotle, all three kochos came directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu Le'atzmo, and he's going to call that a Yechida Achas, which means the Nefesh of man, the ultimate Neshama, Nefesh Kedoymer, was a whole Bria that had all component parts of everything man has to do on a physical level, on a biological level, on a spiritual level, metaphysical level. It all came at one time to man as one Yechida, and that's why he mentions, Boyimsu Shlosh HaKocha Se'ela. And he says, the Zehu Yechida, it's one specific soul containing all these various types of parts. Fakasav Azek, Kipi Mashmo, Yermos came. The Ramban admits, Al Pshuto Shemikra, he says the Aristotelian Pshat and ultimately the Rambam Pshat fits more into the Pusik, Pshuto Shemikra over here, than the Platonic version, etc., etc. He calls that the Pshuto Shemikra. And he says, when he created man as an Adam from the Adama, listen to the Lashon.
He basically was Rabbi Yitzchak a Golem, if you look on top of the page. Ke'evin Domein. He was first formed from dust of the ground, implying that he was what? Lifeless lump, like a great silent stone. There was no life spirit in man whatsoever. Ba'kadosh Baruch Hu Nafak B'yapa V'nishmas Chayim. Hashem blew into his nostrils of life. Which means man started to even move. Forget about being able to think. Man couldn't move until he blew the soul into him. She is Noah Ba, became a living soul who was able to move around. When the animals create, Hashem says, I want you not only to be physical entities, should be able to move around, etc., etc. And he gave him that koyach, that from the Briyat Olam, from the Briyah he created initially, the Eshmiyayim Briyah. And furthermore, he then says, V'zetem l'nefesh chaya, klomesh eshav odem l'yos, nefesh b'chaim. Man became a living thing by being this blown into him, meaning that he became a transformed into a being where up until now, man's initial physical creation of body, he was no better than an earthenware, dead, inanimate object on the face of this earth. That's the way the Aristotelians wanted to learn it, and the Rambam learns it. Lifeless shard among shards, he calls it. Ki halamed tavo bihipuchim, which means lamed means you've had a major metamorphosis take place over here. A man went from one opposite to another opposite. He went from a totally lifeless, not moving entity into something that has levitikite in all types of dimensions. So lama means he went from one extreme to another extreme. And that's the way the Aristotelians learned it, the way the Rambam learned it, etc. and etc. And he brings various rayos, etc. So therefore, if that's the case, we have described over here the Mahalich, I will call it the Rambam's Mahalich. It's the way it is, the way the Rambam's Maskan is in Mer Nevuchim, and it's based upon, Aristotle said that before, that man's creation first had the creation of the body. That's only but some made the perception means the body was created first, and that's what's being described in actuality in Perek Aleph, in Sefer Bereishis. The concept of this other now becoming a full-fledged entity with all its living kochas. Not only its Tzelem Elokim when it comes to its metaphysical capacities, but even its physical movement capacity of being able to reproduce and move around, none of that was there in Perek Aleph until Perek Beis describes V'yitzeh ba'apa ruach chayim, that turned man into an animate entity where the brain and the spiritual capacities of man were given all the kochos simultaneously as one yechida achas, babas achas. It's very interesting. Because what that really means is that man's only thing that man is similar to the animal kingdom was in the physicality of the body, of the elements, but when it came to man's abilities to basically have reproduction and be able to move around, all of that, which basically is controlled by the human brain, all of that power did not become a reality according to the Rambam and according to Aristotle until you have the Pasuk in Perek Beis being mentioned. That Ruach Chaim that Hashem blew in gave man every dimension of his animation, all controlled by the same control center simultaneously, and made man from a total domain into a Chai with all their capacities. That's all right, which means, I will tell you one thing, that in many Kabbalistic Svarim, unlike the Ramban over here, the Nefesh HaChayim prefers this Pshat. The Nefesh HaChayim, I will tell you, even though, you know, it's ironic that Ramban is looked upon more as the Makubal than the Rambam is, but in many of the Kabbalistic works that I've gone through on these topics, especially Nefesh HaChayim, Chaim V'Lajin, he looks upon the Rambam's version and this version, Yichid Achas, as V'yipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chaim, he looks upon this as being the real Yichid Achas, all kachos came simultaneously, and that's why the Nefesh HaChayim says quite interestingly, he says, why is it that it says he's created B'Tselem Elokim? Why not say Tselem Hashem or Tselem some other attribute of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So he says that when man, the word Elokim means Baal HaKochos Kula. If you ever look at the Rabban HaChumash, what's the word Elokim mean when it comes to Hashem's name? Baal HaKochos Kula. All of the powers of the universe.
emanate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the word Elohim. He is the power of powers, the omnipotent we call. He says, why is man called Tzelem Elohim and not Tzelem Hashem? Because he wanted man to realize that you are a microcosm of the Elokus of the Rebbeinu Shalom. All the kochus you have were blown into you from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you're a microcosm of the macro Elohim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Man is the micro of that Elohim. And when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all the kochos are indivisible. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is indivisible. You can't say HaKadosh Baruch Hu has parts. It's one of the Yud Gimel Yikrim. So if the kochos are indivisible in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore man is the Tzelem Elohim, all his kochos of capacities are also basically indivisible, and therefore all the kochos of powers man has, in every energy that he has, in every capacity, have to come from one source. So ultimately, the Nefesh HaChaim learns it like the Rambam does, and as Aristotle was Machavin, you know, when it came to his perception.
You are in any event, that is one shot.
What's fascinating in my mind is the Rambam was in the Mekubal, but he was Machavin in this to what many of the Mekubalim said later on. The Ramban, who was known to be a Mekubal, in his presentation, you can see very shortly, for reasons he feels, based upon Midrashim, he feels the Platonic version is more Pshuto Shemikra, Pshuto Shemidrashi Chazal, than that of the Aristotle and the Rambam's approach. And ultimately, the Ramban at the end accepts the Platonic version, but he has one little dray, which I'll show you in my presentation tonight. So let's now continue reading on this page. We're now holding Rabbi Yisrael on quotation G. And that is the concept of man having three separate souls, initially. And he says, the one who said this first, who gave you the indication of this in our Chachamim, is Unkelus, in the Targum Unkelus on the Pasuk. He says, what does Unkelus say? When it comes to Nefesh Chaya, what is the emphasis of the Targum Unkelus? Man's capacity to speak, to talk, to communicate, to think. All of the stuff that animals don't possess, that's what's being emphasized in this specific pasuk, the concept of the spirit of speech. So it appears, he says, Ramban says in the upon the Unkelus, that he says man has different types of neshamas coming from three different sources, etc., etc. They're separate souls of man. And the last soul that comes in, that's mentioned over here in this empiric base, the rational soul, Hashem blew into man's nostrils, that came last, and that is what obviously was being mentioned over here in his mind in empiric base. Which therefore means, according to this, according to Platonic and ultimately the Nachmanidean version, man, when he's going to say very shortly, when he's created with his physical body, the same way, like the animals, when they're created with the physical body, they also are then given the kechus, apnu, and samach as part of their physicality, coming from the physical bria Hashem created initially. They don't have anything besides that. He's going to say very shortly that when man was created as a physical body, similar to animals, Hashem then gave man initially a physicality of a koach hatzameach and a koach hatnua first. So in many respects, man could function on an animalistic level, and then he blew into him the nefesh achaya mentioned over here that elevated him to a higher level. The only question we're going to see very shortly in the Ramban is, when the third neshama was blown into him, how did that interact with the first two that came from a more earthly source than a divine source? And that's going to be fascinating to see in the Ramban. And you can see when it comes to the world of evolution, you're going to see how this plays into the whole discussion tonight. So let's turn the page number, by say, to page number 8. On page number 8, the Ramban continues that this last shot, the man got the Ruach HaTnuah, Ruach HaTzamachas, and the Ruach ultimately of his ultimate Seichel, from separate sources and such. He wants to say that if you look in Chazals, it seems that they bear out this opinion. The Raizi quotes are interesting, but I don't know if everybody's going to be mushper from them.
He quotes a very famous story in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And he says, the Gemara tells us that Rava, bara gavra.
We talk about the Golem, he created a Golem. It was a human being. And how did they create human beings in those days? They had the Sefer Yetzirah available to them. And the Sefer Yetzirah, which supposedly describes the methodology that Hashem used in Shemus Hashem and Tzirah for Isias, the creation of the whole Bria, and the creation of mankind, etc. It's called Sefer Yetzirah. There's another Sefer I mentioned last week called the Sefer Bahir, that I have at home as well. There are English translations on it. Arya Kaplan, I can lend you the Sefer, you'll see if you get anything out of it. He took the two most Kabbalistic from Yetzirah and Bahir, and he wrote an English translation of it. So whatever it is, he tried to give it some interpretation, a level you're able to comprehend, even though you're not going to comprehend it. And he says over here that this Sefer Yetzirah, she says, Rava created a human being with it. And what happened? Shagri l'kamid Rav Zera. This human being looked like a human being, went in front of Rav Zera. So he looked like a human being, was walking like a human being, and all of a sudden what happened? Hoyimashtoilei v'lo ashtoi. He started talking to this creature, and there was no ability for the creature to respond and talk back. So what was the reaction of Rav Zera? Rav Zera said to him, the min chavraya at? Ah, you're one of the creations that the Chevra used the Sefer Yetzirah to create over here. So you're one of the Gelamos created by the Chevra. Tuv la'afrach, go back to the dirt from which you came. You're not a human being over here, etc. Go back to the dust from which you came. So Ramban says, from here we see that the koach of a human being to be able to walk and move around is something independent of their seichel, their ability to speak and communicate, which shows you it's not one yechida achas, but there could be multiple different kaychas, separations. And he says the Golem is an example of therefore the Platonic version, which the Ramban ultimately accepts. That's one raya. Raya number two, he quotes of Vayikra Rabba, and it says in the Vayikra Rabba, Amar Rav Avin, Beshosh Adam Yashem, when a person is sleeping at night, Rabbi, do you know what you do when you sleep at night? So listen to what he says. When a person sleeps, Haguf Oimel Neshama, your body communicates quietly with the Neshama, and the Neshama communicates with the Nefesh, and the Nefesh communicates with the Malachim above, etc., etc. So that's how somehow your body is in communication. But he mentions different things, different sources, as if they're separate and distinct from each other, and they're not a Yechida Achas. He then brings down, furthermore, another pasuk, V'chein Rucha V'nishmosu Elav Yosef Yorah Kefi Mashmo Shem Shtayim, that the concept of Neshama and Ruach, which are other terms used for Neshama, are also looked upon as separate entities. You'll find in Kabbalistic literature Ruach, Nefesh, and Neshama. You'll find that continuously in Kabbalistic literature describing our Neshama, which seems to say there are multiple entities. So now the Ramban gives a sikum. Listen to his sikum. He says, Imkein, if that's the case, Yom HaKasuv, he first wants to explain the Pasuk according to the first approach, and that is the approach of the Aristotelian Rambam approach, and then he's going to explain the Pasuk according to his approach, which is basically the Platonic approach. Yom HaKasuv, Ayitza Shalakim Es Adam Yitziras HaTenua Shehoi Adam Notzer Kolam Abal Tenua, for man was formed, he became possessing mobility. Ki Aitzira, he Hachios Vaheregesh Shebehemu Adam Lo Gavul Afar. The man, basically speaking, was not just a piece of inanimate object, but he was a clump of earth. U Kamo, and as the pasuk says over here, V'Yisrael Shem Lekim Adam Ha'Chayis Asaga V'Yavol El Ha'Adam. So he says that the word Vayitzru in the pasuk in Perek Beis, refers to man's physicality of koach hatenuah and koach hatzemachas, first being created with the body initially. Va'acha kein yotru bahargasha, then he formed him with what he calls sentience. Sentience means the ability to have sensation, feeling, and emotion. And then nafach bi'apav nishmas chayim mipielyon, he blew into his nostrils the soul of life. From the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the host of Nefesh Azos, Al HaYitzira HaNizkeres, etc., etc.
So if that's the case, according to the Ramban now is saying that according to the Platonic version of this pasuk, what he is saying is that if you look back on page number 6, I want to show you this inside, the Vayitza Hashem Elokim as Adam Afim and Adamar has two different meanings depending upon which camp you're thinking about. If you're thinking about the Platonic camp and the Ramban, Nachmanidean camp, it means man was created Afim and Adamar, but with not just as a dead piece of earthenware, with the abilities of a Koyach Tzemachis and Koyach Tenua, it was no worse or less than animals in physical mobility and movement. And then, after that, Hashem immediately blew in Nishmas Ruach Hayim. That's when man was given one above what animals have, and that is the concept of the Tzelem Elokim, the Nefesh HaMaskeles. So that's the way the Platonics and the Ramban perhaps will learn the Pasuk and what happens over here. According to, quite obviously speaking, the Nachmanideans, I mean the Rambam and the Maimonides, they're going to learn Vayitza Hashem Elokim es Adam Afman Adama Shutla Kamashma. You first created a piece of dirt, earthenware that was lifeless and had no motion whatsoever, and then the Vipa Apa means all animation in man, the Koyach Atzmachas, Koyach of Tenua, and Koyach HaSeichel came into man b'yichida achas. So that's the way each camp is interpreting the psukim according to their individual mahalach over here. He then says on page 8, quotation F, V'odim kula nefesh chaya, living soul, ki b'neshama zos yaskav yadaber, this soul that Hashem gave us, we're able to speak, we're able to yasak hamas, we're able to do all our types of activities, all our actions, kol ha'nefashas v'kochasam l'zeh t'yena, all of those men, their capacities belong to it, v'alamin hazu, lamin ha'kinyin. Now this is the crucial part. This is what I alluded to before. If, according to the Ramban, according to the Platonic version, man first was created with a physical body, with the kolach ha'tzamachas and kolach ha'tenua, and then he was then given v'hoisafa of the Koyach HaSeichel, so were they independent? So he says, until the Nefesh HaSeichel came in, it was no worse than an animal. As soon as he put the Nefesh HaSeichel in, that took control not only of the Seichel of man, but then took control of the other powers that existed before, of the Tenua and the Tzemachas, and all came now under the control of the Koyach HaSeichel. It basically took over, and now they're all united under one, even though they were created and put in separately. You know, it's a different mahalach than Aristotle and the Rambam. According to the Rambam, it all came to Yechida Achas, lock, stock, and barrel. According to Plato and according to the Ramban, first they had the Koyach HaTzamachas and the Koyach HaTenua, and then you're given the Seich, but when that was brought in, it didn't stay separate from the other two, it became the Bilem of the other two, the Lamas, Lamas, Shekinyin, and took over the other kachas themselves. And that's what he wants to say from that. And then he ends one more piece. He then says, Oyomish Oya Kula Nefesh Chaya Nepach L'Ish Acher, the man, because of the living soul, turned into another person. Kikol Yitzirosav Hoyato L'Nefesh Hazos. It means all the various parts now became under the rational soul and basically became totally subordinated to it, you know. Whether they just became under the control of the Seichel, or they became united and connected to it and became one entity, he has two versions in his ultimate. But ultimately, the controlling agent is the Nefesh HaSeichel when it comes to the other two couples before. Now, it's fascinating. In Yeshiva, when we went to Yeshiva, they didn't talk about this, though, that's for sure. This Ramban they skipped and they never mentioned. But what's interesting and fascinating is that you therefore have over here two versions of exactly how our potentialities, our purpose, function in our body. Now the question that therefore arises, once you've seen this, and you saw that Hashem says, they use the word Briya, Vayivra, which means man was not a creation of something before, but it's a unique creation, how does this dovetail with the concept of evolution, the Darwinian concept of evolving from a little bacteria or a little amoeba, and all of a sudden, over millions and billions of years, becoming a human being, and therefore each creature became bigger, more sophisticated, etc. So in your Maariv Mekamos, I'm not going to leave this to your imagination, so therefore I have a little quote. Come, go to page 13 of the Mekamos. Darwin's theory of evolution. So this I call the Kitzeninrat struggle. The Kitzer. There's a very famous physicist, Nathan Aviezer, for those who are familiar in the scientific world, that was a tremendous, first an American, then he became a very famous physicist in the Hebrew University. Big Talmud Chacham, but besides being a Talmud Chacham, he also was a tremendous scientist. And he tried to live in both worlds simultaneously and try to show how science doesn't necessarily contradict Torah Hashkafa. But let me just show you what he says about the Darwin's theory. This is in his book called In the Beginning, which is a perish on the Six Days of Master Bereshis. He talks about the Darwin's theory in his Sefer over here. So listen to what he says. When discussing the scientific evidence relating to Darwin's theory of evolution, one must carefully distinguish, he says, between the fact that many species have become extinct and many new species have appeared, and the theory proposed to explain this change in species. The fact that species change was known from fossil records long before Darwin's famous book, Origins of Species, appeared in 1859. Darwin's book introduced the theory that species gradually evolve one to another through such agencies as the survival of the fittest, the struggle for existence, natural selection, adaptation. These are different terms he used in his book to describe why some species survived and some species didn't survive. It should be noted that in the current use of the term, Darwin's theory of evolution encompasses the incorporation of modern genetic theory and population biology into Darwin's original theory. And this will be the meaning of the term throughout the volume. The synthesis is what's called in synthetic theory, evolution, neo-Darwinism. It's irrelevant. I mean, that's a term that we're going to use scientifically. Now, listen to what he says. A key point of Darwin's explanation is that evolution works in small cumulative steps through the vast periods of time to make primitive species gradually evolve into more complex species. However, this explanation then the transitional forms between one type of animal and another must also appear in the fossil record. The fact is that these predicted transitional forms have never been found. The biggest problem with Darwin's theory of evolution is a very simple problem. If you claim that we're starting on Darwin number one below, and then there's a Darwin number two, a little more sophisticated. A Darwin number three, a little more sophisticated. A Darwin number four, and you can have thousands of Darwins. It didn't jump from one to two. You're dealing with millions and billions of years. It means it had to go from a process of slow transmission and change from Darwin one to Darwin two. There had to be intermediary stages where you see it slowly but surely changing from a lower level to a higher level. The problem is, when it comes to the fossil records we have in all the excavations, on all the different layers of the earth, we find level one, and we find level two, and level three, and level four, but we have never found any fossil showing the transitional periods between level one and two. And we never found anything between level two and three. It's like all of a sudden, it miraculously goes from level one to two, and the transitory fossils showing its evolution from one to another, which is the whole yisod of evolution, it didn't evolve. I mean, there's no transitional sections in between, and according to his thesis, it should have been found in the fossil record. In fact, he brings this down over here. Listen to this. Even Darwin admits to this. So he says, if that's the case, Darwin was well aware of this problem, to which he devoted an entire chapter, writing when this is not a very, not every geological formation, every stratum full of such intermediate links. What happens if you don't have these transitory stages? This perhaps is the most obvious and serious objection which can be urged against this theory.
Which means if you want to object to his evolutionary theory, you don't find any transitory positions in between, then my whole thesis basically is falling apart. So at least it's Moedel Emes, that that's a chesaron. He then continues. He says, his answer was that the explanation lies, as I believe, in the extreme imperfection of the geological record. So the chesaron is you didn't find them yet. Not that they don't exist, but you haven't found it. If you look deeper, you probably would find the transitional step. But that's, you know, that's a nice terrace, but it doesn't mean anything. Darwin's answer may have plausible in 1859, but surely not in 1989 when this article was written. The geological record of fossils has been vastly improved during this last century. It has become abundantly clear that the predictive fossils of transitional forms do not exist. Which means modern day scientists going back to then, as I start mentioning names over here, of the great, greats of the great, Professor Stephen Gould of Harvard University reveals that the extreme rarity of transitional forms in fossil record persists as the trade secret of paleontology. Gould emphasizes that evolutionary trees that adorn our textbooks are not evidence of fossils and have never seen in rocks any of these transitory stages. He brings down Professor Niles Eldridge, curator of the American Museum of Natural History, points out that the fossil data clearly shows that large groups, orders of mammals, for example, rodents, elephants, carnivores, appear too suddenly in the fossil record to admit a rational explanation in terms of gradual adaptive modification, which was a major part of Darwin's thesis. In the same vein, Professor Stanley of Johns Hopkins University describes the general failure of fossil record to display gradual transition from one major group to another. The decisive importance of the lack of transitional forms for Darwin's theory was unequivocally stated by Darwin himself. He says, "He who rejects this view of the imperfection of the geological record will rightly reject the whole theory." And that's one of the big reasons most people rejected his theory, and we can sleep well at night, Rabbi, so when it comes to that. A second serious difficulty with Darwin's proposal that specifies that species evolve gradually is that small cumulative steps that are the background of Darwin's theory never occur. The fossil record shows that species appear suddenly, disappear just as suddenly, and hardly evolve at all. The scientific evidence has been clearly summed up by Professor Stephen Stanley, one of the world's greatest paleontologists, in his recent book, The New Evolutionary Timetable. The fossil records reveal that species typically survive for hundreds of thousands of generations, or even millions or more, without evolving very much. And further on the same page, after their origin, most species undergo little evolution before they become extinct. Professor Gould emphasizes the importance of the recent evidence. They say most fossil species include the two features particularly inconsistent with gradualism. Number one, status, a species appears in the fossil record looking much the same as it was when it disappeared. And sudden appearance, species do not arise gradually, appears in the fossil record all at once, fully formed. So it shows that the gradualism of, you know, the belia becoming more sophisticated in the millions of billions of years, there's no record when it comes to fossil records to prove that thesis. The only thing is, what bothers everybody is why in the world did one species exist and then go out of extinction, and then all of a sudden something appeared again and then extinction. So what's going on over here? That Darwin didn't help him with. Then you have that thesis, which I have to show you before I get to my basic so tonight. He says, the sudden, non-revolutionary, indeed catastrophic disappearance of nearly millions of species at the same time has become an accepted fact to every professional biologist. The respected scientist has summarized the evidence in two recent articles entitled Mass Extinction in the Late Noseatic Era. So if you accept to turn the page, Rabbi Sai. He says, mass extinctions, he says, in the ocean, recent research has revealed that no fewer than seven such mass extinctions have occurred. In fact, all the world's dinosaurs, together with most other then-existing species, disappeared so suddenly that the Nobel laureate, Professor Luis Alvarez, and his colleagues at the University of California suggested that this is a famous giant meteor came from outer space, collided with the Earth to cause worldwide catastrophe. This proposed explanation of mass extinction, the impact of meteors or comets colliding with Earth, is known as the impact theory. So that's the way they want to explain they came into existence and they were blown out of existence. You know, once again, that's how they become as extinct quickly as the basic.
But what? But there are dinosaurs. How old are these dinosaurs?
No, it's not saying that there weren't dinosaurs.
I understand.
Yeah. You know, he's just saying.
So then, how does he explain how they were become? They became extinct.
Because of this, of a media, of a media explosion.
So that's an acceptable theory?
Yeah. Now let me explain to you why it's an acceptable theory in Yahadus. Okay. And I'll be honest with you, without the Mekubalim, we would really be fablungin over here. In Kabbalistic literature, this is the Maimer Chazal that everybody quotes. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara olamos umachriva. There's a Medrash Chazal mentioned many places in Kabbalistic literature, Midrashic literature. Hashem created previous worlds on earth. He created them and destroyed them, then created new ones and destroyed them. So you have already mentioned in Kabbalistic literature creations and then mass extinction. Creations and mass extinction. So you have already a Kabbalistic alternative to the Darwinism, the concept of gradualization over here. According to that Mahalach, you don't need gradualism because every stage of Bria was a brand new Bria, and every mass extinction was a mass extinction. So that's why I'm not worried about dinosaurs. There is a work written in the 1800s, written by the Teferis Israel. The Teferis who wrote Perish of Mishnayos, the Teferis Israel, or Lifshitz. It's written in every Perish Tiferes Yisrael on Mishnayos that you have in every yeshiva on the face of this earth. And it's a little kuntris in which he basically uses that Kabbalistic concept to explain all the fossils that have been found over the generations of dinosaurs and all these other prehistoric stuff and everything else is a residue that the Rebbe Shlomo left purposely on the face of the earth to tell us that there were previous worlds on the earth that were created and destroyed. So he uses the mass creation and mass extinctions, combining it to that Kabbalistic concept, Chazal. And what's fascinating is that of the Gedolei Hador of that time, one of the greatest Pesukim of the time that he lived was the Maharsham, who after he read what he said upon it says, I like what he says, and I give him my Tudas Kashrus. That now brings the Kabbalistic literature and the Metzius of the physical fossil finds into concert with Chazal of Hashem creating worlds and destroying them. He puts it all together. So he's the first really major Gadol who tries to give a Mahalach over here. But without Kabbalistic literature, previous worlds where Hashem created and destroyed them, it's difficult to explain how you can have in the fossil, when you start digging down the different layers, I mean, that's how they see. In each layer, there's a different type of fossil, different type of age. So that's how that comes into existence and how that gives it some credibility when you bring that into the picture. So that takes, you know, that would offset Darwinism of evolutional gradualization. There wasn't any gradual, because there were creations and destructions, so and there was no thing in between. That by Mechazal explains because, and you don't have to have a media doing it. The Russians doesn't have to make a media to cause mass extinctions. He just decides to destroy it. So, I mean, they had to give some type of explanation, so they used medias because they didn't want to bring God into the picture.
You have to say there was a gradual change. It was a gradual
from... Hashem made it gradually. More sophisticated each time
it
went around.
Became more sophisticated.
Yeah, but that was Rabban Hashem's cheshbainus. What the big problem, I will tell you, that he has, I don't have the article with you tonight, but Aviezer, who's a firm guy, says, what makes creationists go crazy with this, now, they were the creationists of the Gaisha world, the church, weren't happy even with this Kabbalistic stuff. Because their basic title was, if the world was created, Bishul B'nai Adam, so it took God so much time to finally figure out how to make Adam. Right. We should have made Adam 1, 2, 3. And what do we need? Creating worlds and destroying. Hashem had to experiment. He was a scientist. He couldn't figure out the formula initially. So that's why creationists, which are basically what the Catholic world were, they couldn't buy the Kabbalistic pshat. We have no answer why Hashem created worlds and destroyed them and more sophisticated. We don't have research on that. We don't have any Kabbalah explaining it. That was the Ratzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever it is. But the fact of the matter, what?
To give us oil.
What?
The fossils are to give us oil. You know,
whatever the Cheshbon is going to give. But we don't have any divine sources to explain why. But the Metzius of to try to therefore reconcile finding fossils and other stuff And even the billions of years. I mean, I'll end off tonight because I don't want you to lose sleep. We haven't finished the topic yet. There is a book called The Age of the Universe that was written by Aryeh Kaplan. Aryeh Kaplan, I mean, Tzaddik Yisraelim, he's the one who wrote all the books for NCSY. He translated something. So he says that in actuality, there's a Kabbalistic tradition that the world is going to last 49,000 years before the ultimate culmination of the existence of the earth. He claims that the world has so far, before our creation, before our Bria, already existed 42,000 of those years. We already went through 60 Yovelos. But the Chiddush of Aryeh Kaplan is there weren't human beings in the first 42,000. So those 42,000 are not calculated based upon human years of 24 hours in a day and 7 days a week, but it's based upon divine years. A divine year, if one, how much is a divine year is? Tehillim says one day of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is 1,000 years. A divine year is 360,000 years. You multiply, just listen before you leave, 360,000 by 42,000, it adds up to 15 billion years. So it means the 15 billion could exist from the previous worlds that Hashem created and destroyed, but our Cheshbon in our Chumash, which is 5009, is based upon that that's the first time human beings were created, and the time frame changed from divine time into human time, and that's what the Cheshbon is that we're calculating upon. So if that's the case, it's not they're wrong and we're right, etc. We're talking about two different periods of time. We weren't human beings until our Tekufa, so there's no reason to go down to human time. But the first 42,000 were divine time, and how it works out calculation, 360,000 times 42,000 Kabbalistically, and he brings Kabbalistic Svarim over there of Talmidim of the Ramban and Talmidim of the great Re'et Mukubalim who held from the Sefer Tumuna, he's quoting where this all comes from. It's a Peladika Sefer to see. If you're interested, I can give you copies of it if you're fascinated. But he already, once he does that, he wipes away the theory between science and because we're not interested in Chumash of the first 42,000 years. It has no gear to us. What's no gear to us is when it comes to our Bria, which is what the Chumash is talking about, from Bria's Adam to the present, that has a gear because that relates to human beings. It could be also, if you're talking about Shemayim of Saaretz, the Bria Yesh Miayim, that first pasuk refers to what happened 15 billion years ago, and then the next concept of all the six psukim are talking about our Bria from basically the ultimate time of the last of the thousands of years are based upon our time, not based upon the Rabbi Nishlom's time. That's the way he reconciles and puts everything together.
You have been listening to a presentation of Ben's Torah.com.